should be to place teacher licensure alongside every other licensed occupation with the Attorney General's office. Filing a report, the AG's office investigates, and the matter is settled. Hoosiers who believe in true racial equality have an opportunity to rectify one of the larger flaws in our public schools. The best way to do so is to amend this bill, providing licensure accountability via proven methods to ensure our kids' safety and success. Thank you, Chairman and Committee.
Thank you, sir. Senator Katora.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you. A couple of quick questions, and forgive me if I'm direct and personal. Do you have kids in IPS?
Do I have children in IPS? No, I'm a former employee of the Indianapolis Public School System.
Great, and I'm a parent of two students who went to IPS. So you selectively chose a case, I think you said Butler School, or which one that you
heard?
Yes,
Butler Lab 60 was one of the schools of
Great.
The case that
so
I
So my described. Kids grew up in the IPS system for years, and I'm not aware, at least in my school district, in IPS, the schools that they went to, that that was a case. But I'm curious with, and I promise you that my questions, I'm directing my questions, so please don't be offended or think that these are adversarial type of questions. Hearing your passion about this, can you tell me about the opposite of your argument, which is how many other times in IPS have you heard the opposite, or any other school district, the thousands of students and teachers that you observed, where you heard statements, whether in classroom or in school property, that discrimination against whether white kids in rural communities, black kids in inner cities, immigrants or individuals with disabilities, giving the massive observation of the thousands of students and teachers that you have done, have you observed the opposite of your argument? Does it happen in the Hoosier State?
To clarify, are you asking if I am seeing asking if I'm seeing discrimination, or are you asking if I'm seeing positive impacts between teachers and students?
No, you mentioned in your statement or in your testimony that the director of racial equity or mm-hmm. whatever the role is, that person made statements that made people think that white privilege or the white race have caused massive incarceration and rounding up people. And the way that I understood you say it is that someone in IPS taught a room full of people an idea that it's white people's fault for issues that are happening in black communities.
Yes, she does that constantly.
So my question to you, have you heard the opposite, given your massive observation of educational policy?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So can you give me a couple of examples that you heard, whether within IPS or across the state, where someone accused minorities, black communities, brown communities, individuals with disabilities, that they were the stereotypical arguments, that they were lazy, they don't work hard, all of that. So have you heard any of these arguments across the state of Indiana?
Yes. Moni Seward, a math interventionist at Longfellow Middle School, did recite on her Twitter profile that she believed the black individuals of Atlanta were bougie, that they were not really worthy of anyone's time because they were just trying to attain money. She repeatedly told parents on her Twitter that they should not allow black and white students to spend time together at the University of Kentucky. So I do see lots of acts of racism from a lot of teachers throughout the state. Right. However, I have not seen large amounts of these outside of Indianapolis public schools. I only saw it once at Lawrence Township. That's when the principal asked us to rate our black students based on test grades, and that would tell us who was the most racist. There are a lot of examples that I could cite, but the further you get out from Indianapolis, the less racist I found the data to be.
Which the interesting part about this, because it happens that I belong to a minority, and my own kids went through several experiences because their dad was born overseas. So I'm an immigrant, proud American citizen. And in their classes, and they attended three different school systems, and this does not reflect on our teachers or schools. And that's why I'm very sympathetic to the idea of how we can balance the conversation about race in our schools, not indoctrination, not promoting certain ideologies. But if black kids for 200 years in Indiana felt uncomfortable with the way that they were treated, I'll give you one example. A respected friend of mine and his own son, who's black, was sitting in a classroom, and a white teacher talked about slavery. The class is predominantly white. Every child in that classroom looked at that black kid, and that kid did not feel comfortable. And he said, "Dad, why are these kids looking at me?" For 200 years, black kids in our society felt uncomfortable. So there is a good public policy question to be asked. Are we doing us a service if we only, because the intention of the bill is to say that no race is superior or inferior to other races, no religion, no sex, no gender. That's, I think, the intent of the bill. Or isn't that the 1 through 8?
Let's finish up with this guy, and then you can address Senator Baldwin.
So the point is that teachers are not educating or recommending or saying that a race is better than race. So the point is that for 200 years, we have to acknowledge the pain and the suffering of certain communities in Indiana of how people were bullied, felt different, not at the expense of anybody else, not to shame anybody else, not to say that it's the fault of anybody else.
Yes, those are the historical academic standards in the state of Indiana. They're not under question under this bill.
Correct. Yeah. So
what is your question, Senator?
Yeah, and let me. And so let's move on from that train of thought, Senator, because it is not. I agree.
So I think we have different opinions on whether it's not the context of this bill addresses this point or not. But I think I'll reframe my question to you. I guess you were very passionate about advocating for cases that specifically mentioned that a certain race is being mistreated.
Yes.
By the examples, but you neglected to share any other example about other races and communities that have been suffering because of these things for decades. So why is that?
So my question is, you're upset because I didn't provide enough examples of racism that fit your narrative?
No, I'm not upset. My job as a
legislator... You're spending a lot of time on this question, respectfully, Senator.
Yes. So my job as a state senator is to understand your logic of your argument. And if you are passionate about making a point, all what I ask you is that be fair by presenting the counter argument. So I think that you could have recited 1 or 2 or 5 or 10 or a million.
I can answer your question effectively from what you're saying. There was a teacher in California. So she did an illustration with her class of Sokotoa. It's a way to teach trigonometry, in which she started doing a faux Native American dance. Very disrespectful, right? I stood up alongside many other in the education reform movement, and I called it crass, I called it rude, and I called it disrespectful, which I will do alongside any action towards anyone of any color that is based on segregationist ideas of racism, which are filthy. And everyone in this chamber that I have seen finds those things abhorrent. The reason I did not list them is because I have not seen in Indiana schools that these things are prevalent from a curricular and a pedagogical perspective. Obviously, it is disrespectful for students to turn around and look at a black kid if they're talking about slavery. I would really seek to find anyone who would not find that disrespectful. However, I do not see that encouraged in Indiana curriculum or pedagogy.
So I'll conclude my question. Yeah. So I'll be more than happy to engage with you and share with you specific textbooks by which, for example, the Muslim faith in our current curriculum teaches the history that the Muslim faith is the faith that promotes terrorism in our public school books. And I had to engage with my history teacher at my local school to say, can you please provide different books so that I can review where you're getting that information from? And I engage effectively with my teacher.
Sure.
So the point is that I want us to be fair. I want us to be fair that when we look at books, when we look at curriculums, that we don't make one argument that prefers, in a secular society, we uphold the Constitution, and we cannot endorse, recommend, or support, you know, a religion over another religion. Or, you know, so I appreciate your testimony. I just was hopeful to have a fair presentation of the argument when it comes to race. And you mentioned CRT, and you were passionate about it, but in here, the alternative argument about what happens to other types of, you know, teachings that happen in India. But I appreciate that. I think I overextended my argument.
Thank you, Senator Cordura.
There was a textbook or curricular assignment that did paint the Muslim people of the Muslim faith, of Islam, in a way that painted them all as terrorists. Of course, that should be thrown out immediately, just like I don't pretend that all Baptists are related to the Westboro Baptist Church. I don't. You know, relate my friends of the Islamic religion to acts of the terrorism of a few. And I am not encouraging anyone to do so. So, yes, this is broad across all cultures.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Senator Cordura, for sharing that. Anybody else? Questions for this gentleman? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, committee.
Who's else? Cindy Black.
Jennifer Hendricks
is... the last one.
No, not the last.
Almost last. Hang on a minute. She's correcting me.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Like my
name is Cindy Black. I'm a mother, a grandmother, and a lifelong resident of Indiana, currently in Carmel Place School Systems. Since my children have all graduated from the Carmel Clay school system, I now find myself looking forward to watching my first grandchild enter the public school system, and that is the source of my interest here. And yet, earlier last year, when I began to hear what was being taught in our local schools, that excitement turned to concern. Like any other parent or grandparent, I could not believe some of the stories I was hearing. So I spent some time in our local school library, and my heart sank as I discovered that our shelves, our school shelves, were filled with inappropriate books, books that push divisive social and political agendas, books that have explicit sexual conduct, books that do not meet our community standards, and that do not align with our family values. And those are not my words. Those are the words of our own local school superintendent. But more on that in a minute. So I decided to stand up. So I'm here today to thank you for pushing forth this Senate bill. I fully support the bill. And I'm happy to say that you're standing with the parents and the grandparents and the community members that want the schools to return their focus to academic excellence. And I especially want to thank you for removing the loophole that provides immunity to our schools that offer sexually inappropriate material. Over the past year, I spent a good deal of time reviewing books in the Carmel Clay School's online library. I've worked alongside a group of dedicated parents and grandparents in an effort to bring these inappropriate books to the attention of our superintendent and school board. Unfortunately, our efforts were largely unsuccessful. In an attempt to bring greater awareness to the types of books on our school shelves, I participated in a public reading at our local school board. For that effort, we were chastised by the superintendent himself for reading selections that he considered inappropriate in a public setting. I find that ironic that he was offended by the very books that he was offering to our children on school grounds under the protection of Indiana law. In closing, I just want to encourage you to pass Senate Bill 167. Is it a perfect bill? Likely not. Could it do more? Perhaps. But it goes a long way to returning our focus to academic excellence while fostering an environment that is free from material that has no place in ours.
Any questions? Thank you for your testimony, and thanks as well for hanging around today. Jennifer Hendricks. Damian Stafford. Somebody's got to be last.
Thank you, everybody, for staying. My name is Jennifer Hendricks, and I'm a parent of four children in the Carmel Clay School District.
There, please. I'm having a difficult time hearing you. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. I thought I was going to get up here and talk a lot about the survey and data privacy, but it looks like everybody's covered that. I can share with you my experience and how I came into paying a little bit more attention to what was going on in my children's education. What started as a school survey evolved into a months-long investigative research project about student and parent data rights in education and the discovery that our school, Carmel Clay Schools, had not yet developed a data privacy policy. In the age of multi-billion-dollar big tech companies whose business models depend on the collection, sale, and transfer of data, we're subjecting our kids to enormous risks every day. Educational institutions rank fourth for being targets for sophisticated cybersecurity attacks. Our school fully migrated our students to online learning during the pandemic without the security of developing data safety protocols. At the exact same time, the school they admitted to me they dropped the ball were dealing with a large-scale data breach involving employee social security numbers and other personal information. Individuals who were affected by the breach weren't notified until 6 months later. Data exists in numerous forms, at rest, in motion, in storage, each requiring robust protection. Allowing third-party tools to interface with the school student record software puts our students at tremendous risk. Furthermore, the parents were not allowed to question the third-party tool or to see which data the tool would collect under the auspice that the company's product was proprietary. We were told no personally identifiable information would be collected, which simply wasn't true. They collected names, genders, reduced school lunch status, gifted status, ESL, grade level, and other identifiers. My husband's an advanced communications professional. We've spent a lot of time and a lot of money locking down our children's internet profile, only to have data improperly collected by our school, by the same company and big tech funders that we were trying to protect them from. The surveys are slanted, invasive, and non-transparent. The process spills student data into the digital world, and many vendor contracts across the state can then be used by fourth parties for research. Additionally, we're exposing our children to the potential to have their data monetized or transferred and sold. We've now established parent committees in our school that will be reviewing our students' data. This bill prevents the unauthorized capture of student data, prohibits the school from quietly redefining their board policies to prevent parents from viewing the survey in advance, and prevents the tool from being classified as a school official and from redefining the survey as academically necessary. I'll finish. When we think of school safety issues, it should also include digital safety, data privacy, and protection. Senate Bill 167 is a first step in helping us protect the rights and privacy of our students.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Appreciate your testimony. Thanks for staying here the entire time.
Oh, thank you as well.
You bet. Damian Stafford.
Since I'm last, I'm going to go ahead and start us off with a quote from Ronald Reagan. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We will preserve for our children the last best hope of man on earth, or we will sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. If we fail, at least let our children and our children's children say of us, we justified our brief moment here. We did all that could be done. Hello, my name is Damian Stafford, and I would like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members for allowing me to speak. I'm a father of two amazing boys, 12 and 17 years old. I'm a disabled veteran who fought in OEF from 07 to 09 and was medically retired a little more than a year after returning from Iraq. I do prefer House Bill 1040 as it goes a little further to protect our children. No more masking of our children in our schools and on our buses. As masking our children is shameful and criminal, which I believe is another reason we have so much anxiety in our youth. We are teaching them to be scared of everything, being scared of everyone around them, the air they breathe. And then we want to give them the help they need through social, emotional learning. Like the old saying, we're with the government and we're here to help. You say that you have ways to report wrongdoings. I reported my school district transportation to the Indiana Department of Education through an online link and to the transportation director for an online link to the Indiana Department of Education and to the transportation director for the Indiana Department of Education about my children being removed for not wearing masks, while entire buses and some bus drivers were not masked. The school retaliated against me when a couple days later I received a cease and desist letter from the attorney representing the school district and also partner to the vice president of the school board, dated the very day after I reported the school district. And all this draconian rule, let's take back our state's rights. Restore freedom. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments, questions at all from the committee members?
I just want to come and say, Mr. Chair, thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your patriotism as well. So I want to say thank you to all the committee members. I know Senator Cruz had to go to dinner, and as well as Senator Lysing, but you all have been troopers in this. And all the testimony, those of you who are still here, gave us a lot to think about. And so we appreciate your time. And with that, I conclude the first meeting of 2022 for the Education and Career Senate Ed Committee.